This man just committed mass murder and mercilessly ran over 50 innocent people in a single horrifying rampage. The race was on to catch the mass killer who committed this horrifying act, but he managed to flee on foot into a neighborhood. Little did he know, his every movement was being recorded, and what would follow is the largest manhunt this town has ever seen.
Hands up! Put your hands where I can see them! Put your hands up!
Daryl Brooks had been on the wrong side of the law since he was just 17 years old. He was clearly a troubled and disturbed individual, racking up charges of domestic abuse, reckless endangerment, and was even registered as a sex offender. But all of this seemed to culminate in 2021. On the grand return of the Waukesha Christmas Parade following the pandemic, Daryl Brooks decided to ruin the lives of countless people as he took his anger out on the Christmas parade in a blind moment of rage. From the hour of 4 p.m., neighbors reported a violent argument coming from Daryl's house. He and his girlfriend weren't on the best of terms and would occasionally explode into fiery rows such as this one. Often it'd be about their troubled relationship, and this one ended in physical violence toward his girlfriend and one of the most violent and senseless acts Wisconsin has ever seen. 30 minutes after the argument, Daryl exited his house and sped across the familiar roads towards the center of Waukesha, and at 4:39, he reached the main street before plowing through the barricades to the Christmas parade at 40 miles per hour. 5 seconds in, he claimed his first four victims, several members of the Dancing Grannies performance group. As he continued, he pressed on the accelerator, swerving to hit as many people as possible, killing an 8-year-old a few seconds later. This is when police and bystanders began to react, trying to clear the roads, warn others of the attack, and attempt to stop Daryl from driving. Thankfully, this worked to some extent, and only one more person was 10 seconds later. After a total of 30 seconds of the murder spree, Daryl sped out of the parade route, leaving 62 people injured behind him. Once he was out of the other side of the parade, Daryl fled roughly half a mile from the parade before abandoning his SUV near a house on Elizabeth Street about 6 minutes later. From there, he fled on foot. He even tried knocking on someone's door and claiming he was homeless, asking them to call an Uber for him. He was given a jacket and a sandwich before fleeing when he noticed police searching the area. Not long after, he was captured by a security camera, which helped the cops approximate his route and track him down. It's hard to see, but if you look closely at the top of this road, you can spot Daryl trying to inconspicuously navigate his way around Waukesha to escape the police. But given the scale of this event, the cops were dedicating all their resources to finding him. Cops set up a perimeter around where his SUV was found abandoned. Nobody was allowed in or out, meaning that if Daryl was here, they'd find him soon. Eventually, a resident spotted him hiding out in the woods, and the cops were able to narrow their search efforts considerably. After 6 hours into the manhunt, the cops located him at a house in a residential area and moved in to apprehend him. This is the body cam footage of that intense arrest.
You guys don't want your name on it, man?
No. Okay, lads. Cooperate with us.
Okay.
I just used the microphone to call for a minute, that's all.
Oh, okay.
That's what I need you.
If everything turns out to be on the up and up, life will be good, and you'll be on your way, all right?
With Daryl in custody, the officers were able to begin questioning him, but quickly, they were forced to stop due to the fact the FBI wanted to take over this case. I've asked a former detective to analyze this interview, and he was able to give a deep dive into every influential moment. Prior to the investigation, the detectives involved already knew just about everything. They knew he was driving, that he didn't own the car, and that he had found the car key inside his pocket. What makes this interrogation so interesting, though, is that Daryl doesn't even know what he's being brought in for. Police never told him he was suspected of the parade killings. From the cops' perspective, this almost five-hour-long interrogation wasn't really to figure out if he did it, more so to see how Brooks would react. They wanted to see how much he'd lie, and if he'd felt any remorse for what he'd done.
Oh, face that way.
It's the shoulders.
There you go. All right. All yours.
Oh, you can drop your hands now. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Holy shit. How long you been out of work?
When did I get locked up?
It's a few months.
Anything to do with the pandemic that's been hitting?
Yeah.
So hard.
That's the reason why.
Yeah. I bet.
It made me smooth off. I got stuff lined up, though, so.
Yeah, what?
I'm probably gonna go back. I was working at a sheet metal place, So I'm probably gonna go back there.
And do you stay at your mom? You talked about your mom. Is it her address you stay at now?
She owns the house.
She owns the house.
She doesn't stay there anymore, but she owns the house.
Okay.
She has her own house.
We put your mom as emergency.
The detectives have already found the first indication that Brooks is willing to lie. If you haven't noticed, the extreme shoulder pain Brooks complained about earlier has miraculously vanished just a few minutes into the interview. He was able to move his arm effortlessly as if the pain never existed, something that would later be used as evidence in court. And his tendency to lie will become even more obvious as the detectives continue to divert his attention.
When you left Stephanie's,
it was still daytime.
It was still daytime?
Yes.
Okay. Were there still a lot of people out?
It was still people out.
Okay.
It was still people out. Not a lot in that area, but it was a lot of people out. And it was, like I said, it was older couples walking down the street. It was younger people walking down the street.
An event or something was going on?
I don't know, but it kind of seemed like it was a lot, like it was something going on to where it was vibrant.
How long was it between leaving Stephanie's and those cops yelling at you at the door of that guy's house?
Was it dark when they yelled at you?
Yeah, by the time they came, it was dark.
Okay.
But we had been sitting out there. We had been sitting out there for a minute, me and the guy.
To find how long? Estimate?
20, 30 minutes, maybe. We were sitting right there, just like this, just sitting on the porch. While I called me an Uber. I called the Uber. I said, look, man, I let him know. I said, look, I ain't trying to rob you or nothing like that. Because when I knocked on the door, he kind of was like, whoa. I'm like, look, I don't got no weapons, I'm not trying to break in your house, I'm not trying to rob you.
Daryl has clearly thought a lot about this alibi, since he's managing to deliver a lot of very specific details. However, the officers already have mountains of evidence against Daryl, and don't believe a word he's saying. As the interrogation continues, Daryl continues to lie until the cops have had enough.
Let me ask you this, Daryl. So you weren't out in Waukesha Saturday, just Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Right? You're a part in the investigation. There's a lot of parts, right? Any investigation, there's
investigation.
People we talk about. Well, this domestic abuse thing I'm telling you about.
Okay.
Right? You talked about being a religious man.
I can do better. God. I can definitely do better.
We all could.
I'm not.
We all could. That's why.
Yesterday was a mistake. I should have just freaking watched the game and went home.
And that's the thing. What do they teach us in Christianity, Daryl? That they teach us that we're broken, right? We're sinners. You're a father. You got three children. 18. 18, 14, and 7?
Yes, sir.
All right, you got a mama that raised you well, and a God you believe in.
Absolutely.
All right, and all of them are, here's the thing they'll all want, is to tell, you're telling the absolute whole truth and nothing but the truth, right?
Absolutely.
I just have concerns if I fact check that Darrell's not telling me the truth. You don't have a car, so Marcus had to bring you out. You don't own a car, your mom doesn't own a car, right? So why did we find you with a car key in your pocket?
It wasn't in my pocket. I don't even know where they said that was laying on the ground.
The car key in Daryl's pocket is a key part of this case, as it shows that Daryl does in fact drive, despite his statement to the officers. Knowing that he's quickly being backed into a corner, Daryl tries even harder to convince the officers of his innocence. But these officers had done their research, and were about to take a different angle that would hopefully guilt him into confession.
It's your car key. I'm trying to be as open and honest with you as I can be. And I'm not calling you a terrible man. I'm not saying you were out yesterday hunting, and just let me finish. But you did not walk to that house. You did not walk to that house. You did not come here in a tan key. You got a key in your pocket, your car, your mom's name, for the love of God, Marcus, for yourself, for your family, you know what happened yesterday, for the people. Tell me what happened.
Well, what?
With the car.
What am I being
with? Your mom's car. You're driving goofy, people call you in, you drove out of there in your mom's car, the red car, you're driving a little silly, probably because you're pissed. You met up with Erica in the car at the park. She got in, you talked, and what you're telling me seems pretty consistent, that there was nothing physical.
I didn't put my hands on her, nothing.
But you met her in the car.
Tim, what's going on, man?
Asking you a question.
Just being
you were out there driving kind of crazy. Some people said you were driving kind of crazy.
Daryl is heavily on the back foot now and has very little room to wiggle out of this one. Eventually, the pressure from the detectives would cause him to cave and admit that he was driving at the time, now choosing to change tactics and try to garner sympathy from the detectives, deflecting blame onto his girlfriend and an apparent alcohol problem.
Erica, she's a sweetheart until she gets that alcohol.
The alcohol's the problem.
Then you are a type of ass and I have somebody touch you, and I'm gonna keep my daughter away from you, yeah. And even my mom doesn't even like her around when she's drinking.
I've never been with anyone as bad as what you're saying right there, but I think he can attest to it. We've all
Ben probably looked like he didn't do it with some chicks, man.
You know.
So Darrell, what were you thinking when you went driving through this parade?
What am I facing? I don't have problem talking with you guys.
You got people injured that had to go to the hospital.
So they're saying I injured somebody, or you're saying I injured somebody. So I'm looking at what, reckless endangerment?
The very least, yeah.
The very least?
People got hurt, that's reckless endangerment. I don't know exactly what they're gonna classify it. Yeah, people had legs broken.
Endangerment's where you may have hurt somebody by your actions. You did hurt somebody by your actions.
You wanted information from us, we're sharing.
I want you to watch and see what's in it. Yeah, it's a good point, it's information sharing.
Why do you want me to see that car? Why?
Because I think it's important.
Why is it important? Is it to make, like, what is it?
Why don't you want to look?
Everybody did. Everybody knows what was going on.
There's a children right there. See those kids? See that little kid right there? You gonna look at it?
It's too hurt, man.
You're too hurt?
Yeah.
Emotionally?
Don't do that hurt. Please don't.
Don't do that?
Don't do this. Please.
The most shocking part about this interview is this moment, when Daryl discovered what had actually happened to the victims. Daryl didn't once ask about the victims or if anyone had lost their lives, very likely because he had no remorse to give and was concerned only for himself. At this point, the detectives have successfully achieved the main objectives of the interview: to get Daryl to admit he was driving the car and to see if he had any remorse. The interrogation was exceptionally long to corroborate the strong evidence they already had and to acquire footage that would persuade a jury that Daryl had no remorse, which is why they let him lie and portray himself as a selfish, evil man as much as possible. And in that trial, Daryl would continue to paint himself in that exact light as he decided to represent himself. This would result in one of the most ridiculous and infamous court cases ever on the internet, with Daryl screaming, shouting, and even threatening his way through the trial, constantly making legal mistake after legal mistake, ruining his chances of getting away with a low sentence. So to start with, Detective Jay Carpenter comes to the stand and has a lot of information to share about their little chat in the interrogation room.
You interviewed the defendant, Daryl Brooks, on November 21st, 2021 at approximately 11 o'clock p.m. Do you recall that?
Objection. I don't think it's being called that name for the record.
Objection is overruled.
Yes, I do recall that.
Overruled.
Not relevant.
Yeah, it is relevant.
What observations did you make during this clip about the use of his right arm?
Both his arms would come out like this and move. To me, what a person would do when they're normally conversing. It would seem unusual to make those movements if he was in fact in as much pain as he was claiming to us he was in.
Last night, we asked for State's Exhibit 81 to be admitted into evidence, which is the defendant's statement provided to Detective Carpenter and Detective Stern on November 21st of last year.
Objection, I didn't provide any statement on the 21st.
Jury will disregard the statement by Mr. Brooks. He is not testifying, therefore his statements are not evidence.
Then my objection should be noted for the record.
You may be hearing that Daryl repeatedly keeps calling objections. His legal experience is clearly based entirely on movies and TV. But unfortunately for him, in order for an objection to be sustained by a judge, the objection needs to have a legitimate reason. Daryl is unable to object for a legitimate reason, and as such, almost all of his objections are overruled by the judge, meaning the prosecution is able to continue.
I believe that these photographs are designed to make a suggestion to the jury that Erica Patterson is a bad mom. I think that is what the defendant is trying to do. If we go down that road, we would be forced to counter that claim by pointing out that not only does the defendant not live with the child in question, he doesn't live with any of the other children that he has. He impregnated Erica Patterson when she was a minor in Nevada, and for doing so, he was convicted of statutory sexual seduction, pled guilty in March of 2007 to that felony offense, and is a sex offender on the registry as a result. So if there's any causation that would lead to Erica Patterson being a bad mom, Mr. Brooks has a direct role in that causation.
And that's furthermore, I'll object to that.
I'm not
because
sure.
That's a lie.
Let him finish.
At the end of the day,
let him finish.
We're gonna open the
Mr.
door on
Brooks.
That. No, since he wanna make a record and not be accurate, so let's be accurate all on the record since you think you know so much.
Once again, Mr. Brooks is being loud, disrespectful, interrupting.
We can ask that question
to him. He is over the top animated right now. Mr. Brooks, I'm ordering you to sit down and to let the state finish.
No, I'm not going to sit here and let somebody be inaccurate on the record.
This is how a huge amount of this trial played out. The prosecution would make a point, and Daryl would get extremely animated and try to deny it with nothing but anger and false truths. In this example, the prosecution mentioned Daryl's sex offender registry, to which he responded by saying that she told him she was 18, as if that excused him of all wrongdoing. But the most shocking and unprecedented moment of the trial was when the judge had to stop all court proceedings, but she felt genuinely scared of him.
So as long as the jury's out, we should probably discuss that.
So that had to be said. So it's the defendant.
That's not how it was said.
That was how it said. You want to run the record back?
Mr. Brooks.
So I'm the only one. I got one ear that work, and I heard that.
This
on,
is
man.
To benefit on, you so that
no,
you
not.
Understand
ain't none
your
of this to
witness
benefit me, so let's
has
be clear
a prior
about that.
Record.
Your Honor, when I leave the table, I'm away from the courtroom, and I have to elevate my voice.
So she
alleged
had to
record
her voice
of ableist.
Stop talking.
Come on, man. Like, I don't know who y'all be thinking y'all fooling. I accept the value in turn for value. This document.
One more interruption and you're going to be removed to the next courtroom.
That's what you want to do anyway. So can
Your Honor,
you tell,
I believe he has 7 prior criminal convictions, an OWI 4th from 2003, criminal trespass to dwelling from 2006.
All right, I need to take a break. This man right now is having a stare down with me. It's very disrespectful. He pounded his fist, frankly.
The judge put up with an awful lot in this trial and gave Daryl a huge amount of leeway in order to keep everything as fair as possible. But even with all that in mind, he still managed to completely botch his legal defense even when he was acting calm and polite. Take this for example, where he argued he wasn't being given a fair trial because he wasn't allowed to confront the state of Wisconsin itself.
Not if I'm not allowed to face my accuser. Your Honor, my accuser in this matter would be the state of Wisconsin. With all
sir,
due respect,
I believe your Sixth Amendment rights in that regard have been complied with.
I'm requesting a written judicial fact, finding of fact and conclusion of law on this issue for the grounds that I just stated. I'm not being awarded the chance to face my accuser, which I should be awarded that.
By technicality, Daryl is correct. The Sixth Amendment does grant him the right to confront the person or persons accusing him of the crime, in this case, that being the state of Wisconsin. But what he's asking is a physical impossibility. The state of Wisconsin is not a person nor a witness. In this case, he is being allowed to confront any witness of the crime that's involved in the trial, so his rights are all being met. He's simply grasping at straws by seemingly trying to challenge the U.S. judicial system as a whole. And Daryl's misunderstanding of the legal system was made even more clear when it came to his closing arguments. If he had chosen a lawyer to defend him, maybe he could have gotten away with slightly less charges or a lighter sentence, but instead, he gave this travesty of a statement.
Good afternoon. It's been a long day. First off, I'd just like to start by letting you guys know that it's a lot of information that you guys should be privy to, I believe. You and you alone have the power. You and you alone decide what is truth and what isn't truth. You should be informed that You have the power to nullify any law that you don't agree with.
Daryl is not entirely correct here. Yes, the jury can nullify laws. However, this is only done when the law that has been broken is extremely strange and the person is 100% guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. For example, Alaska has a law that states it's illegal to whisper in someone's ear while they're moose hunting. If a case like this found its way to trial, the jury could nullify that law. Daryl Brooks gave his closing statement for 50 minutes without saying very much other than attempts to debunk the evidence and acquit himself of his crimes. However, there was one point that stuck out from his closing statement that shows just how evil he truly is.
It's hard to keep everything together emotionally. And honestly, I don't believe that I have any more tears left. It's been a hard year for the families, mostly. That opens the door to talk about forgiveness for a little bit. With every healing process, there comes a forgiving process. It's not an easy thing for anyone.
Daryl is trying to deflect the jury onto it being a tough year for victims as well as anyone who was present at the parade. But in reality, it was his crime that made this year the toughest for the victims. The jury deliberated for less than a day, and they came back with a verdict that he was guilty on all 76 counts. Daryl was ready to be sentenced, but not before the judge spoke to him directly first.
Frankly, Mr. Brooks, no one is safe from you. This community can only be safe if you are behind bars for the rest of your life. The community is not safe from your violent and criminal conduct unless you are in custody. You left a path of destruction, chaos, death, injury, confusion, and panicked as you drove seven or so blocks through the Christmas parade, never once stopping or seemingly caring about the wake of carnage that you left. Four of those blocks were turned into a scene that frankly is no different than a war zone. This court is imposing a life sentence without the possibility or eligibility for extended supervision. One life sentence for Virginia Sorensen. One life sentence for Leanna Owen. One life sentence for Tamara Durand. One life sentence for Jane Kulik. One life sentence for Bill Hospel. And one life sentence for Jackson Sparks.
Daryl Brooks was sentenced to 6 consecutive life sentences in prison without the possibility of parole, meaning that Daryl Brooks will spend the rest of his life behind bars.